Okay, I ready.
Are you done texting and
I'm
everything
not texting.
during?
I was copying down the stats that I wanted to use because I'm also using my phone. I won't have my phone during the recording, so I needed to write it down.
Hold on a second. You have stats and you've come prepared.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast.
Except Chirag.
Really? I thought we were going to open with Happy New Year. Let's go to Happy New Year first.
No. Priorities. Happy Veganuary and Happy New Year.
Happy Veganuary and Happy New Year. Obviously, this month is Veganuary, I guess is a better way to say it. And this is, it's a pretty sort of informal movement in a way where all of us, including a lot of companies and everybody else, tries to encourage people to go more vegan this month. Or to start out by going more vegan this month, and hopefully they, you know, fingers crossed, they continue it all through the year. What's been your Veganuary experience, Hito?
I'm sorry, I'm just a bit. I just thought of something the other day. I was online and somebody was so offended by Veganuary. I guess automatically the Veganuary ads come on your page. So I was just
right.
Doing my favorite thing, which is reading comments, and some guy was like, "Oh, we need to have like a." Dairy for February, and I'm like,
yeah, because we need
of
that.
The
yeah.
year is yours. Like, shut up. People,
I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, but let's be honest. I mean, even for a lot of people, even January is a month to indulge, and all of December tends to be. So yeah, I don't know what the issue is.
Yeah, well, my January has been just another day in my life.
It's funny. I was telling a friend something similar. They were like, "Oh, look at all this Veganuary stuff," and I'm like, "You know, I mean, it feels like another day, really. Like, it's not something we're doing only for this month, anyway." So,
yeah, it also doesn't work because we are in a complete lockdown.
Were in a complete lockdown.
Yeah. I meant people in the Netherlands.
Right. So that's one of those big things that happened in 2020, right? Like you, sorry, I just wanted to.
Jeez, get over it. the people of Netherlands, or Netherlands yep. is in a lockdown. So yep. I guess if there weren't a COVID or there weren't a lockdown, then you could have seen more companies and posters and it would have been more in your face if you were going out, eating out and things like that. But I haven't noticed
right.
much apart from online. Yeah, it's a big thing online.
Right, right.
But I guess you have some stats, right, to tell us where we
yeah,
are.
So, So, I mean, this year, what it's supposedly in the UK especially has been a record year. This is purely pledges, right? So, but there have been 500,000 people have pledged to try out Veganuary this year, which is interesting. And then in other countries, so there are about 80,000 people in the US. There's 150,000 people in Latin America, which is so it's a combination of many countries, of course, and some 50,000 people in Germany are sort of the different areas where people have pledged to try out Veganuary, which typically is like at least 7 days, but we also encourage people to try it out for an entire month. So, I mean, from that point of view, and because this is the highest number that have pledged, I think it's an interesting thing. I mean, we've obviously been talking and seeing sort of the awareness go up, and especially because, in a way, because of last year, we've seen a lot more, you know, at least people take some kind of interest, and or as you said, like it's kind of in your face a little bit at the moment. So it's nice to see that at least the awareness is on a high. Like, I mean, again, no idea whatsoever how many of these pledges are actually going to turn into actual attempts or anything. We stay optimistic about that, but I think it's just nice to see that the awareness is constantly going up.
But I don't know. I feel like Germany numbers seem to be quite low, because I know Germany or Western
even
Europe,
even US for me quite... even the US number seems low. But...
What was the US number?
80,000.
Oh, that's very little.
Yeah, but again, this is to be fair. This is like the ones that have actually pledged within the Veganuary movement, right? So they might be doing things independently.
Right. Well, in any case, I think positive news for the animals, lesser animals slaughtered.
If you're looking only in the UK, though, the number has doubled since the number of people who have pledged in January 2019, right? So in just 2 years' time. So again, I do agree that it feels low, but I will point out that ultimately it's obviously these are people who are not vegans who are pledging to take on some form of being vegan in January. So for that number and the fact that the number was only 250K all of a couple of years ago, I take that as a sign of good awareness.
Okay. One of us has to be optimistic, I guess.
So over here, obviously, you know, there have been a few announcements that have come out in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, companies try to coincide sort of vegan-ish announcements around January, or at least leading into January, minus whatever they do in November for Vegan Month. So we've seen the one that was interesting to me, which I shared with you, was the Al Islami company, right? So there's this huge frozen food company here, right? Primarily known for frozen chickens and frozen meat, a lot of like burgers and those kind of things. They were pretty much a mainstay. At least growing up, they were a mainstay in the freezer sections of supermarkets. And they have launched a vegan burger, which is an entirely plant-based burger made from sunflower protein. So that was an interesting kind of announcement to kick off January here, at least. There are a couple others, and I won't get into all of them, but we'll leave links in the show notes for some other announcements that came out. But for me, that was kind of the big one. Kind of, to me, that's an indicator of, you know, a company that's as historic as Al Islami, pretty much, if I'm not wrong, their entire business is in the frozen meat section, if not, you know, over, you know, three quarters of it. So for them to enter that's an indicator of the kind of demand.
Oh, yeah, I remember you shared that article. I was quite pleasantly surprised because that's a brand name that you saw in most supermarkets. You grew up seeing that brand name on the shelf, especially in the frozen section. And obviously, I grew up vegetarian, but I would see it when I would go buy ice cream.
Yeah.
So I was quite impressed by the fact that they've not made much noise about it as such, but they've actually just gone in, realized that there is a potential in the market and made the change.
Yeah.
To adhere to that demand. So I guess that's great.
Yeah. And as far as I know, because normally like a lot of these companies sometimes, and I mean, we've seen this with even like the McDonald's of the world, right? That they would generally be like, hey, we're coming out with this soon. Or they're kind of drumming up this whole thing. Whereas in this case, it was just the announcement saying, hey, we've launched it. It's here. It's in the supermarkets. Go get it. Which is kind of nice as well, right? And again, for me, you know, this is... I don't want to take other names, but this is a very historic company in terms of the fact that they were a mainstay in the frozen food aisle, primarily for meat. I mean, it's not that they haven't done like the odd veggie burger or whatever, but so it's quite nice to see them catering to the demand, or the fact that there is a recognition of the fact that there is a lot of people now, you know, requiring this and wanting this. And ultimately, this is what we talk about a lot, right, in terms of allowing our wallets to what's the word I want here?
Decide?
That's the word. And ultimately, this is something we talk about. Let me do that again without my hand up.
I know. Yeah, finish that sentence.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, and if I cut it here, my hand will come off my glasses while I do it. So that's not going to be great, is it? Anyway, I think it's again, it goes back to something we've talked about quite often on the show, right? In terms of allowing our wallets to kind of indicate the kind of demand or the fact that our spending power can cause companies to make decisions like these is a very good sign. I mean, I'm sure that they either between sort of understanding what the market was asking for and looking at their own potential, potentially their own sales, right, of what's being bought at a time like this would have made them make a decision like this, because it's not something they've ever done before.
True, I agree.
Okay, so one of the things we're going to kind of talk about today is we're going to talk about the psychology of veganism. And so we're kicking that off. So Ohita, why don't you actually first start off by telling us where this idea came from?
Yeah, I mean, the other day I was looking for some sort of vegan forums or seminars to attend, and went on Eventbrite, and I saw this one online digital forum about the psychology of veganism, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I know we've kind of spoken about this in bits and pieces over different episodes, but I thought maybe for Veganuary, fresh start, fresh year, maybe we have some new listeners and maybe it would be good to kind of just bring all these ideas. So that's what inspired me to probably speak about this. Maybe perhaps we can talk about the psychology behind veganism, but we can also speak about when you are a non-vegan, what exactly is your mind going through and what are the main reasons that actually stop you from taking the plunge, as well as what are the main reasons that actually push you to take that plunge. So I thought that would be something interesting to talk about.
Yeah, I'll bring a reference about this later because I was randomly watching an episode yesterday and it kind of came up. So we'll talk about that in a bit. So in terms of what you were mentioning, like some of the episodes, like, or at least one of the episodes we've kind of talked about, this is the one where we talked about the advertising bit, right? Like how sort of like advertising and sort of society pressures dictate, you know, what is okay and not okay in terms of these things and how that has an impact on that. But why don't, I'll let you kick off kind of what were some of the overlying or what were some of the bigger themes that came out of that that talk?
Well, obviously, there was a lot of statistics and demographics, and there were some numbers. I don't have the final presentation with me, but whatever I recall is that we did speak about how women tend to be more, prone to try veganism versus men, mm-hmm. and we've obviously spoken about the toxic masculinity part in one of our previous episodes.
Yeah.
And what exactly it is that makes women more compassionate in general. And it's the same thing, right? As an animal rescuer as well, there are more women out there in this field than there are men.
Yeah, or if we look at the vegan groups we have here, and again, as you mentioned, like this is something we actually did like a men versus women kind of debate as well at one point, right? And then we saw the same, and we kind of tried to probe this a little bit to understand why is it that it's so, I mean, we're not talking like, you know, it's all 60-40, it's like 90-10 is what we see in terms of ratios in a lot of these groups.
Yeah. So while the men are known to kind of progress the economy and bring in the money and get the jobs, it's actually women who are going out there and making the society stronger mm-hmm. on a more compassionate, emotional level. And but again, other than that, there were a lot of interesting insights on what really makes, like I said, what really stops a person from going vegan. And one of the main aspects of that is cognitive dissonance, right? So there's a very interesting talk that the lady did. She's a professor at one of the universities in the UK. And she mentioned that our brain basically has two systems. One is kind of like at the front. So it's more intuitive. It's more quick. It's more like, okay, I have a problem in front of me. What's the first thing that comes to my mind to resolve it, right? But then there is another side of your brain or your brain system, which is at the top, which is more rational. It's more explicit. It's more, you need to, you know, make a little more effort to kind of get into those thoughts to see whether the decision that you need to make is correct or not. So most people who are at the verge of having information about veganism, their first thought is like, oh my God, but I can't stop eating cheese. But oh my God, how can you ever ask me to give up my burgers? Right? That's their most intuitive, quick thought to that. And that's where they stop. And then they go back and they're like, no, this is something that I can't do. Versus people who are like, yes, that's fine. But then I'm going to sleep over this information. I'm going to try and do a little bit more in-depth searching and see what my rational brain says, right? So most people tend to use that part of the brain, which I thought was quite interesting.
So it says actually most people go that way rather than the instant reaction, because the instant reaction way is what we tend to see most of the time.
Exactly. So, so most people tend to go with the instant reaction, the intuitive, quick reaction.
Let's just find the easiest reason they can think of to say no to something like this. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess like a lot of people also think that, or rather mix up veganism with consumerism. And it's not a consumerist attitude that a person needs to change, right? It's not about, oh my God, someone's asking me to stop buying chicken for my family forever. I think it's just beyond that. Vegans are not vegans because they've decided to stop consuming chicken one fine day, but it's more of that. I don't want to say it's a thin line because it is a very, very thick line and it's hard to kind of cross that line due to social conditioning and a lot of other things. But if you have understood the motive behind veganism, which is giving equal rights to other beings on this planet and acknowledging the fact that they suffer as much as you do in terms of physical pain, in terms of mental pain, in terms of fear, in terms of happiness, anything else. And if you give that kind of right to animals, there is no way that you would want to eat that kind of food again, because then you know it comes from an animal, right? In fact, on the other hand, people are constantly like, oh, but how are you not eating cheese? Oh, but do you not miss eating meat? And it's not only about me not missing it, but it's also about when I look at it, when I pass that aisle in the supermarket, I'm abhorred by it. Like, you know, I'm just like, oh my God, this comes from an animal, because now I finally opened my top part of the brain, which is the rational part. And now I can't look back. Now I can't unlook it. You know, I can't unsee it. So yeah, I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's a big motivator. I mean, if you remember when we, so this would have been when we started the show, soon after we started the show, you know, we got our hands on the vegan egg, right? From Follow Your Heart. And I remember like it had been quite like, we were looking for it and couldn't get a hold of it, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, it finally showed up over here. And I remember, I think you had gotten it from Abu Dhabi, if I'm not wrong. And it was one of those really weird things where like, you know, by that point, I think I'd been doing it for about 4 months or maybe even slightly longer than that. And as someone that used to eat eggs pretty often, was like a big, I was very excited by it, I remember. And I got it and I made it the first day and I was like, wow, like, you know, this is something that like, comes pretty close. It kind of, I can feel like I'm recreating something that's cool. I had it a second morning and I just never wanted to eat it again. And I realized that actually I had lost the taste for enjoying that. I'm not saying I lost the taste for eggs, but lost the taste for enjoying that, because that flavor is kind of linked to that. Now, this is not to say that like I'm not exploring, you know, cooking with jackfruit or like trying out a mock meat or a mock meat burger every now and then. But this is just the fact that like the when people do ask this question, because they do ask it to me quite often, so don't you miss eating cheese? And actually I'm like, I don't miss eating cheese. Yes, it has significantly helped that you get a lot of like dairy-free cheese now that can take care of things like a pizza, which is primarily where my cheese needs kind of start and end in a way. So those things help, but I'm not going out craving cheese. I'm not going out craving those things that I used to eat a few years ago, simply because that's not what I want to do.
Yeah. And I guess the interesting point over here is that people don't realize that cheese can be addictive. And that's the reason that they feel compelled to ask this question, that how can you not eat cheese? Like, it's such a big deal. It's because I guess when we were vegetarians and if somebody told us you can't have cheese, that would have been like, oh my God, how come, you know? And I still have that. Like you said, pizza has to have cheese. Otherwise, it's just, you're still more open-minded with that. You're like, you it's would try and experiment. Yeah, you would try, but you would try and experiment and still call it a pizza. I wouldn't call anything without cheese a pizza. But it's more of a concept than the taste.
Yeah.
Like you can just put some, I don't know, processed and flavored tofu on it. And I still need to see that cheese thing. But that's more of a mental image. But I don't miss the taste of cheese because now my body has been used to not having that addictive casein. Casein is the ingredient that actually messes with your brain, and that's the addictive ingredient that is hard to give up. right? And that's why a lot of people go into a complete shock when they realize that they're supposed to give up that particular product. It's not mental. It is science. It is physical. They actually feel the withdrawal symptom automatically when somebody speaks about giving that thing up. And I don't want to be held by a particular food product that I'm absolutely so addicted to that I can never give it up. I'm quite addicted to junk food, I wouldn't lie. But there are days now where I make conscious effort of not eating junk food, of not eating potato chips. Yeah.
Well, you can't just slip that in the middle of shit. Like, no. This has to be its own category subtopic, man. Come on.
I just made loaded sweet potato with quinoa and no, it wasn't quinoa. It was millet and spinach and I don't know, just your kind of food. And then at the end, I was like, no,
There was no need to drag me into this.
Vegan cheese on top because.
Okay, fair enough.
Slow transition. Why not? It's in your honor.
It didn't sound like it was an homage at all. Also, look at you going homage. What has happened to you? Who are you?
I'm just sitting at home and watching a lot of TV.
Clearly, okay, that's what. Okay, that
including that helps. A lot of YouTube recipes. I now have a playlist called Recipes on my YouTube library. Okay, this is big news.
This is very big. I did this. Like I said, this needed to be its own subcategory. We have to do an entire episode on this. That's what our next episode is going to be, like how your eating habits have changed.
Okay, but in that case, you have to pay me because now this is about my personal life and it's not for sale. It is for sale. I meant.
This entire this entire podcast is about your personal life, by the way.
What?
This entire podcast is about your personal life.
How come? When did that happen?
You being vegan is a very personal choice you've made with your life.
No, not really. It's not a personal choice. Stop it. You're killing everything that we've done so many years. It's a choice that everyone should make.
But it's about your personal life, right? It's not about your professional life.
I'm just going to pretend that we didn't have this conversation because there's a lot I'd like to say over here. Okay, so I guess that kind of cognitive dissonance is something that majorly stops people from turning into a vegan. And yes, food is one of the most important aspects of it. And companies that are producing non-vegan food do not make it any easier. That's why I guess we call a pig a dead pig bacon, or we call a dead cow beef. We give them these disassociated names to kind of create the feeling that they're not eating animals. And that's the line that people who really want to look at veganism should cross.
It's funny you're talking about naming, right? Because we kind of touched on this last year, right? There was this kind of debate in the EU about how like almond milk should not be called milk because that's misleading apparently. I guess cow's milk can be called milk, right? So.
Yeah, but just the term milk, right?
Yeah,
it's the name that you've given.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
I guess that's quite interesting. But then again, there are certain aspects to why people turn vegan. And I think the first, I don't know about you, but for me, the first thing was awareness, which basically kickstarted this journey, right? So for me, it was hardcore graphic images, videos, just realizing that, okay, I never really ate animals, but I did consume animal products. I did consume eggs and dairy, and I wasn't aware of factory farming for a very long time. But when I did, I just couldn't get myself to consume it anymore. I just couldn't give myself a certain justification. And this is what we do when we find something uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
People eat meat because everyone wants to call themselves an animal lover. Everyone thinks that they're an animal lover. Nobody says that, oh my God, I hate animals.
Yeah.
And when you say that, nobody wants to accept the fact that you are indulging indirectly or directly in animal cruelty when you are eating animals, they don't want to associate that with them being animal lovers, right? And I considered myself an animal lover, and I was rescuing cats and dogs and had pets and things like that. And then I was like, if I'm never going to do this to my dog or my cat, I'm not going to do this to any other animal, right? So I had to make that association of domesticated farm animals with my pets to be able to give myself that kickstart into veganism.
Yeah, and again, I mean, you know, this is something that is not only a cognitive dissonance that we all carry, but it's continually propagated as well, right? So the idea that like a cat is sweet and a dog is man's best friend, and therefore you see outrage over a dog festival, but you don't see the same kind of outrage when it comes to, or for example, when there was the controversy quite a few years ago about horse meat being one of the ingredients in burger meat, and that creating an outrage in the US, for example, where horse meat is illegal, at least in many states. And that creating a different kind of outrage, whereas this, you know, but nobody had the conversation to be like, yeah, but we're talking about mixing that with another animal's meat anyway. And so, you know, so those kind of like odd associations, as you said, like they're also further propagated by everything we see around us in every aspect, right? So in terms of what is a cute animal, what's not, what can be, you know, like a chicken is also a bird and a parrot is also a bird, but a parrot is a pet and a chicken is not, right? And then we see the same with pigs and so on. So there is this like weird kind of thing where somebody has decided at some point that these animals are okay to eat because we can farm them and deliver their meat in little nice little packaging. Where so therefore this is good and that's not.
Yeah. So what was your motivation, Chirag, to go vegan?
I mean, we've spoken about this like a long, long time ago. But I mean, for me, it was a combination of. Actually, fundamentally, it was just two things. It was talking to you, because I'd been vegetarian for a little while at that point. Funnily enough, my going vegetarian at the time was not motivated necessarily by anything particular outside of the fact that I was used to it. But I found that I couldn't go back to it, or I was getting uncomfortable walking through those aisles and stuff. And I think that manifested itself. So one of the things, as I said, that happened, I think, a few months before I went vegan was you went vegan. And so you and me were having quite a few conversations. You were explaining to me some of the rationalizations you had, and not rationalizations, but the reasoning you had behind doing so, and how you were getting, I remember you were very, very, feeling very, very guilty about consuming, even accidentally, something with dairy in it or whatever. And then there was this incident in India, right, where as a mark of protest, somebody slaughtered a calf to make a point. And I just remember watching those kind of visuals on TV and feeling like I mean, outside of my thoughts, which kind of materialized over a couple of days, I just couldn't drink milk. And, you know, milk was something I had added to my diet at some point. I was not a heavy milk drinker, but it was something I used to have with my morning coffee. And I remember the next morning not being able to do, like looking at that bottle and thinking like, no, I don't want to drink this. But as the thoughts sort of materialized, I realized that, you know, one of these, the standout factor for me from that incident was the fact that somebody thought that it was perfectly okay to do that as a mark of protest, which makes very little sense to me. But anyway, the beheading and so on was done on live television. And then, you know, they paraded the head of the calf around, and it was just one of those things. It wasn't even a cow, it was a calf, so that just made it worse. I'm not saying it would have been better if it was a cow, but I'm just saying it just was that much worse that you know, you took the child of an animal and just killed it as a mark of protest. And I was just like, you know, we would not do that to a human. In fact, if that had happened to a human, like, you know, he would have probably been put to the death penalty for the kind of gruesomeness of the crime to do that on live television in this manner or anything like that. I mean, unfortunately, there have been live telecast beheadings and things like that have happened, and we call them terrorists, right? So just for me, that was that like sort of light bulb moment that I had, where I was like, wait a minute, we have somehow created this environment for ourselves where it is apparently okay to do that. That it's it's not that people weren't outraged when it happened, but it was the fact that we just looked at it as a piece of news to be like, oh, wow, that was crazy, and to move on. And I couldn't.
Yeah. I mean, let alone a human child, they wouldn't even, the world would have been outraged had that been a puppy or a kitten.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there are obviously laws in place for torturing certain animals and things like that. And I'm assuming that that person wasn't booked under any charges.
He was actually, I think, but it wasn't exactly an animal cruelty thing because there isn't one. I think there is a general animal cruelty law, which I think was applied in that, but actually it was mostly applied because it was a whatever disturbing harmony type of situation. Which was anyway the point of that protest.
So I didn't realize that I was responsible for you turning vegan. So
you definitely played a part, yes.
So I'd like to accept this award. I was going to pick up a plastic bottle, but Chirag said don't. So I'm just going to pick up this candle.
So what would be the point of cutting it out if you're going to mention it anyway?
Because I have to mention it on how you treat me. Okay.
A plastic bottle. The animals come first.
I have been using this plastic bottle for the last 1 year.
That's good. That's good. But like still, it's not about how I treat you. I'm treating you just like I'm treating the animals just as importantly. That's the point.
So I'm just going to pretend like Chirag doesn't exist and I'm going to continue giving my speech. I'd like to thank nobody but me because I'm awesome. And maybe a little bit. I guess I can thank my cats. And all the pets that I've owned. Vegans hate it when you say you're a pet owner, so you have to be a pet guardian. Whatever. All my pet companions from the past who motivated me to not use animal products. And I guess you guys are just lucky to have me. I know, right?
Wow.
There you go. I have somebody who agrees.
I have to point out that if you start something by saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to pretend like Chirag doesn't exist and then accept my award for turning him vegan, but I don't exist. So.
You don't exist like now when I'm giving my speech.
But then you can't accept a speech for doing something to me if I don't exist.
Thank you everyone for coming to my TED Talk.
It was an award acceptance speech. You need to become a...
if you're not giving me that, so now it's just a TED Talk.
Good point.
I guess when you have that awareness and you've decided and you've made the decision and you just cannot look at animal products the same way as you used to, that's half the battle won anyway. And I guess then it's just about preparing yourself. For me, I just cut out all the animal products. I couldn't do a slow transition because that would have never worked. I would always have a day where I'm like, okay, maybe on Tuesdays I'm just going to allow myself and this and that. But that would, because now I was doing it for my morals, it wasn't okay for me to eat animal products one day of the week because it obviously did not make any sense. So I decided to cut out all animal products overnight. And I have to be honest, the first month was hard. You're a bit lost. You spend more time in the supermarket reading ingredients. You still do, but now you're just used to it. I guess your taste buds are still kind of craving for all the addictive stuff that you had been eating. And then a month and a half passed. And then now it's like, it was so easy. Like it was all the stuff that you'd read online about how am I going to live without eggs? How am I going to live without milk? And how am I going to never eat dairy in my life? And I don't miss any single bit of dairy in my life at all. In fact, if somebody's eating cheese around me, the smell kind of makes me nauseous, you know, and has a strong cheese smell. And I'm just like, how can you eat this? I don't think I can ever eat this. I'm never kind of attracted to it as such. So I guess once you do that, then life is easy for you and the animals.
Yeah, and I think for me, it was kind of a transition as well. So it did take a little while. I think it took me almost 3 months before I started feeling a little bit what I would call normal, in that sense anyway. But one of the things, as you mentioned as well, like, it was a very fast transition for me. Like I gave up dairy instantly. Like that incident was like pretty key. And I it was like, it was an instantaneous thing. I didn't want to eat dairy. I think there was some cheese that came in when I went out with people and stuff, and it was just something. I was at a phase where I was not ready, or I didn't feel like I wanted to have a conversation about it or why I was doing something or whatever. And it was just easy to just be like, okay, I'm just gonna let this one meal slide. But I found myself feeling pretty guilty the next morning that I had done that, and I couldn't stand up and just talk about it. Anyway, all of this stuff kind of eventually settled off. The other problem I had as well was kind of my breakfast went to nothing for a little while, because eggs were generally, eggs, toast, and that kind of thing were generally, or coffee with milk were generally my go-to breakfasts. And so the coffee bit, it's fine. I mean, I enjoy black coffee. It wasn't a big deal. But I just found myself like, I'm going to say, oh, I'm just left with toast now. So what do I eat for breakfast? Also realizing that, you know, I think as much as there is a, there's a change, obviously you're making a very significant change to your diet. One of the things that happens just consequentially when you remove dairy from your diet is you actually take out a lot of calories, right? So a lot of cheese, a lot of cream, I mean, not a lot, but whatever, any cream, any cheese, any dairy inside something else.
Butter.
I mean, okay, I wasn't the big butter person anyway, so it was okay. But any kind of cheese format, right? Whether it was a pizza, whether it was a sandwich, or whatever, right? And so suddenly, if you're eating everything, just removing the cheese, you're actually taking out pretty big component and a pretty big fat component out of your diet. And so one of the things that I had to deal with quite an adjustment was then finding myself feeling sluggish and lethargic at the end of the day, because I was just not eating enough, or my body was not used to this lower, sort of significantly lower calorie count in its day-to-day. So I think that was, for me, like one of the big things that, it took me actually a while to even realize that I was doing that, because I just kind of moved, stopped eating it, gave up eggs quickly after, and then what I found myself, or what I found happening was just, like a month later, I was just like, why am I tired all the time? Like, what's happening? And it just hit me at one point that there's actually like this whole thing about like the calorie count had changed so significantly that I needed to actually bump my meals up, right? So I was kind of snacking a bit more and kind of making compensations for that until I felt a lot better adjusted, which is the case now.
But I guess you used to eat a lot of healthy meals, and then you would have a little bit of dairy with it. In this case, cheese, like you'd make a healthy meal and then sprinkle some cheese on it or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but it was also like, so that used to be like, my dinners were always light like that, right? But, you know, you're out and about during the day, your daytime eating used to be, my daytime eating used to be a bit erratic. And also it would be like, even if I, you know how it was, I mean, now it's, of course it's better, but you still run into this problem here. Like you go in to do a grab and go sandwich, and the vegetarian option is either like mozzarella and pesto, or like halloumi and like a couple of veggies, right? You don't actually have a proper vegan option. And then sometimes the vegan options here tend to be like, well, I guess we'll just stuff some potato in here or sweet potato in here, because clearly that's what I want to be eating inside bread. I'm down with the hummus anyway, so it's cool.
All the time, everything. Oh my God, there's hummus overload after.
But like
how does everything have hummus?
Because they don't know what to do with with that component, right? And that's what I mean, right? So there used to be like that cheese component used to stay, because it used to be in almost any sandwich that I would be eating. So that's where I think I saw like that drop. That and the morning coffee, which had like quite a bit of dairy. Or I'd be out and I'd have a latte or a nice latte, which again is predominantly milk.
Yeah. So those are the changes that we mainly made. And then I guess there were smaller changes about what we wear, what we use. That weren't very hard to kind of transition into. I think food was a major thing. But I guess in the end, what really for both of us, maybe I can take the liberty to speak for both of us, is that associating our food with a life is what kept us going and what keeps us going. And that's why there's never any need for, oh my God, I should stop this because I have a brain fog or things like that.
No, we're not going to let her go. We're not going to let her get off that, are we?
No, never.
No, I think, by the way, I mean, it's a good point that you mentioned, and I wanted to bring it up too. You know, ultimately, and we make this differentiation quite often, there's a difference between eating a plant-based diet and being vegan. And I think that that's something also that we've tried to bring about on the show quite a lot, and we've tried to share a lot. It was also something that changed for me as a person. Not anyway, you know, just culturally, we don't really get involved in a lot of leather anyway. But it was still kind of not something I was actively looking at, right? So as much as I don't like have like a plethora of leather shoes or anything, but I did have a belt. I mean, my watch used to be leather. Those kind of things did exist, right? And it was also making that change to be like, okay, well, I have this, that's fine, but any future purchases, I want to make sure I don't do that. I mean, now again, life is a little easier. You have brands like Collet Spring and so on that actually not only have vegan lines where they're entirely vegan, but a lot of others as well, they're nice about, you know, marking in their stores or even online, especially now that's pretty much where everything's been happening. Talking about what their products contain, talking about whether or not they're cruelty-free, you know, especially with clothing and stuff like that, or sustainable. So we're starting to see more and more of that labeling come through. And so definitely, I mean, I'm someone that will always look to make sure that if I can find out, there are some practicality things that maybe still avoid, like not fully avoidable. But for the most part, I mean, I'm always, yeah, like you said, it takes a little extra time, and not just in the grocery, but anywhere, every time we try to do something. I think I had this conversation with you, right? Like I was trying to buy a pair of shoes, and I kind of spotted it, really liked it, and saved up to get it. And when I went to get it, I realized that there was an element of leather in it. And I was like, well, that's, I don't want that anymore. And so the hunt continued. The same thing happened with the bag I wanted. And again, you know, it's very, very difficult to find a messenger bag that's not leather. And so that took its own sweet time to find. I mean, now again, you do find a lot of like cruelty-free leather options. We saw a couple of companies in India. So yeah, I mean, it takes a little effort, but and sometimes with certain things, like I said, you know, where you're not used to it, or the companies are not really advocating it so much, you do find that a bit hard. But it's nice, at least. I mean, I know in Dubai, and I know I'm sure over there as well, and in most parts of the world, we're starting to see more and more adequate labeling being put into place.
Yeah.
Not just food, yeah.
So I guess that's it then. That's all we had for today. And people who are still contemplating or are curious or are even against veganism, just think about what we've spoken. See if you can find any rationale behind some of the things that we've said. Try out Veganuary if you want to. I mean, I guess your body will thank you for it, if nothing else. Be compassionate and be kind.
Yeah, and have a happy 2021. Reach out to us. Of course, you can contact us on the.2.vegans on Instagram. We're also, on Facebook and other places. We'd love to hear what you guys are doing for Veganuary. We'd love to hear if there are questions you have about adopting Veganuary, and alternatively, or hopefully, adopting a vegan lifestyle as well. Ethel gets very excited when people ask her questions.
Yeah, and please don't go online and ask for dairy or crap like that. Like, just don't embarrass yourselves.
All right. So it's going to be our tagline for 2021. Like our goodbye phrase.
Oh my God, I wasn't prepared for this.
I'm allowed to ask you one stumped question, right?
Okay, I'm stumped. Goodbye. Sayonara.
Bye.